So we're turning into, good morning, the last diademo, and you have your choice of either doing a dyad or doing a group teaching with the person that you're in your dyad with. And so you can kind of discuss it among yourselves. One could do a dyad and the other could do a group. You could both be doing a group or both be doing dyads. It's your choice to refine, possibly free yourself more from the scripts if you're doing a group, and if you're doing a dyad, to try to feel more into it. Sarah asked the question about what are we doing when we're working with the group? And my sense is we're doing both always. And she was asking a particular question about, say, working with a group of military who we know have post-traumatic stress or they have deep wounds that they're working with. And my sense is whether we're working with a person with absolutely no wounds at all or a person with wounds, this is long-term. This is long-term project. So we're trying to actually forge relationships that will unfold over a very long period of time, and in a way then entering into a deep, very sacred, timeless student-teacher relationship. And even if we're teaching just a 10-week group and those people are going to go on, hopefully they really like what we've been offering them, so wherever they go on to, they're going to find another teacher in a similar modality and then hook up with them again. So we're doing handoffs, aren't we? Given that, if I'm teaching an ongoing group or a 10-week session, I used to teach only ongoing groups, and then I got so much traveling it just wasn't possible anymore. So I started making them into semesters, and now I've even had to shorten some of them just because of my own schedule. But say I'm teaching a 10-week course, and maybe I take a break, then I teach another 10, take a break, that's nice for me, or I'm teaching ongoing. I'm trying to help people, one, learn the protocol. So learn the kind of 10 steps, and potentially I'm keeping in mind that larger map. So I don't necessarily teach that as such, but I am teaching it. It is impregnated in the 10 steps. So we're working with the elements, the senses, the mind, the sense of self, the sense of separation, sense of vastness that can open me into my infiniteness and my sense of non-separation. But in a 10-week course or in an ongoing class, what I'm trying to do is help each individual, as they're learning the protocol, adapt the program for themselves. So if I'm teaching 20 people, I have 20 individuals I'm teaching, not a group. And I shared with Sarah, it is my understanding that there was no group until World War II, when the psychologists and psychiatrists were so overwhelmed with the masses of men who were coming back and women from the trenches. They were overwhelmed, and they couldn't do one-to-one. So they started putting people in groups. And we know that group can be effective, but it's not as effective as one-on-one. So we're trying to do the best we can. So if I'm working within a group with, say, vets, then what I want to try to do is help them tailor the practice to themselves. So I would be helping them think through, say, at the emotions, and they're linking it, say, to their post-traumatic stress. What are the emotions that they relate to with regard to their post-traumatic stress, and to try to put them into a hierarchy, a continuum from benign most to most intense, and then soliciting them to take the benign ones and first begin to work with that in their yoga nidra until they're very comfortable, and then slowly, incrementally, to take larger and larger experiences. Same thing with their beliefs, the memories, everything. So that's where the worksheet comes in, and we can build worksheets depending on the group that we're working with. Then I have time before the group, before we do the actual IRES group practice, and afterwards, where I can ask for questions and help people refine their practice. Or I can say, you know, I'm available at other times. If you'd like to meet with me privately, then we can further refine their group practice. And I'm always trying to solicit people into doing their practice on their own. And, you know, we do offer them these home practice CDs, which are still kind of containers. It contains them, gives them structure, but we're slowly trying to help them formulate their own practice. And I always tell people, keep your finger on the pause button. Pause it. Stay as long as you need to with whatever you are, then release the pause and keep going if you'd like. But ultimately, even like with the scripts, one of the things that you might think about doing is record your own scripts. Lie in bed with a microphone or your computer and just talk yourself through a yoga nidra. And then type it out and there's your script. Then eventually we might just have an outline. And then one day we go to class and we go, oh, shoot, I forgot my book. And lo and behold, we do a pretty good job. So, but I'm always trying to think of a group as individuals within a group setting, and I know that a group practice is not as effective. But what I see time and time again with the people I work with and in my own practice, what a miracle. Kelly gives a group practice. I'm in La La Land, floating around. Her voice is over there somewhere, but I'm doing my own thing, kind of coming and going out. And you wake up and you kind of come back and you think, oh, I know I missed the whole thing. And then a few hours later, bang, something happens. Something breaks free. And we just see this time after time after time, the simplicity of the practice, even if a person seems like they're not engaged, something deep is happening. Like the story of that woman I told you who came to our homeless group, fell asleep, said, I don't know what you guys are doing here, went away, came back the next week, said, I don't know what you're doing here, but I want more of this. Because she said, my whole week was just joy. And so I don't know what happened because I was asleep last week, but I'm a different person. So there's a miracle going on here, and we want to respect the simplicity of it. And hopefully as you get in and do the work more and more with groups, you'll see that. And you won't have a clue what's happening. I have no understanding of what this is about. Long ago, I gave up trying to understand it. All I know is it works. So it's a turn on. You do it. And while you're doing it, you're going, eh, this is too simple, it's not going to work. And then, lo and behold, people are dropping out of the sky. So, you know, just welcome the miracle of it. I'd like to emphasize again the simplicity, the no fixing, we're not trying to change, and we're trying to help a person basically meet themselves at every level, body, senses, mind, emotions, thoughts, beliefs, and this deep mystery of interconnected wholeness, non-separation. So if I cut to the chase, to me the practice is about total liberation, total freedom, in the midst of life. And personally, I think understanding non-separation is a piece of cake. Navigating the ins and outs of life is probably the most difficult thing we're going to be doing. It's not easy to meet all these challenges that we're faced with in all of our movements of life. And eye rest and yoga nidra meditation gives us a way of navigating. But to me, it is about total freedom so that we're able to feel and welcome everything that life gives us. And then it feels to me that life just starts living us. And our sense of small me just starts to join that larger movement. And there's just celebration in that. And also periods of deep movements of emotions and things, but it is ultimately about facing ourself, helping the people we're with face themselves, and moving into total liberation and total freedom. And that's why in certification I asked you to come to two retreats where we can dive into this deeper movement, whereas sometimes in the training, it's a training. You know, we're learning things and learning how to practice, whereas in retreat, we're just diving in and we can let go of trying to understand. Do you get what I'm after? You know, the price of doing this practice, it's not for the faint of heart. And the price is all of our beliefs. All the ways that we tend to structure and assemble the world and create these projections of how everything is. And really what's happening is we're unraveling all of those, so we're meeting life naked, without expectations, even though there are expectations, without beliefs, even though there are beliefs. We're learning how to basically take off our clothes, body, senses, mind, expectations, beliefs. And then at the end of the practice, don't we? We put them all back on and we go out and we pretend that we're somebody. But we know these are just movements, and we're interconnected with this incredible great mystery of life. I couldn't think of a better way of working in life. I'd like to just take a couple minutes, and then I want to move into the dyad demo. touching on some just themes, this law of awareness, which is in the manual in level one, but for me the law of awareness is anything that we place in awareness ultimately self-liberates. That is its nature. The nature of a thought, of an emotion, anything, is birth, growth, life, decay, death. And if we're truly allowing something to just be present in awareness, it will go through its own evolution and dissolution. So we don't have to push it or pull it. We might get anxious because we want it to happen more quickly, but it's got its own life, its own growth and its own death, and we can't change that. And the more we see that everything has its own process, the more we are there just joining process and moving with it. And when we're working with the person, we're just joining their process. We're not trying to push it or pull it. We're just surfing with it. And there's the beauty of the breath. We're just joining the breath. We can request it, sure, to lengthen at times, and surely it does. But we're still just in the process of it. As we're in the process of it and we're navigating the objective movements, we're also learning how to feel the great expanse of openness in which these movements are unfolding. So there's a double process always unfolding. Our focus on the objects, motions, thoughts, and this greater field or container that is holding it all, in which it's all unfolding. And as we explore that container, we realize it has no edges, no boundaries. We meet our own vastness. So the law of awareness has tremendous ramifications of us moving from being kind of just in a becoming process, where we're always becoming, aren't we? We're always moving into something else from where we are. We're always in the becoming process. And we're always in the being process, because there's something here that when we really feel into it, it feels always fresh, but always the same. This quality of, we're calling it awareness or presence or being. I like the word mystery myself. But when we really feel into it, we can't find it. It's not objective. It's not over here to the left and over here to the right and back behind me, out in front of me and down below me and up above me. That's a nice exercise. But when we feel everywhere simultaneously, it deconstructs our sense of localization, and we're just in the being process. So it is this paradox of becoming and being, becoming and being. But there's no place we're moving to in the becoming process. It's an infinite unfolding. And so we're trying to help ourself and the people we're working with become comfortable in this unfolding process of becoming. And to me, post-traumatic stress is simply where somebody got stuck in that process. They're undigested elements of becoming that we're helping them meet, and as they really meet them, they self-liberate and a person comes back to a lovely way of being in the midst of their movement of digestion. So we're living in a paradox, aren't we, again, of duality and non-duality. Duality, our senses, mind, and body project separation. If we didn't, we couldn't be here in this room. We'd all be walking around totally without any sense of separation, and we couldn't function. So duality is present within this larger openness of non-duality and that awakening of the seventh sense, where we're perceiving our non-separation, our unboundedness in the midst of our boundedness. Because if we sit with our eyes closed, you can't deny there's something here that feels very localized, that does see, that does create a sense of world and objectivity. And when I feel it, I can feel the resonance of it. It does feel bounded and contained and localized. But when I go and try to find the boundary of it, I can't find a blooming thing. It's just all immense. And so we're living in this wonderful paradox that the teaching is bringing us into. And we have to respect this, because you'll meet people in your group classes who will go into that unboundedness, and it breaks open their whole view. And it can be frightening at times if they go in too quickly. And we're trying to meet it in ourselves, so then we can meet it when that may happen with another, or we can meet another who's very benignly opening to that understanding. So we're always in a paradox. Duality, non-duality, both are true. Becoming and being, both are true. Separation and non-separation, both are true. We can localize into one or the other for periods of time, but then we'll return always to the paradox. Does that make we're all on the same page with that? Managing disruptive behavior. Let me do this last one and then we'll do the thing, and I've got a whole list here I want to come back to. But managing disruptive behavior. I've taught maybe 10,000 people this process, and I can really count maybe on one hand, maybe two, disruptive behavior. It's rare. It's rare. But we meet it in just the same way we would meet anything else. First, we have to meet our own fear and our own discomfort. If we're meeting that and we're learning how to be with that, then if you know how to meet your own disruptive behavior, isn't it so? Can't you extend that to another person who's in a moment of disruptive behavior? You're not judging them. You're not trying to shut them down. When they really realize that you're not trying to change them, contain them, control them, there's a deep relaxation that starts to happen in them. Even so, they may need a sense of containment, because they may be getting freaked out over their disruptive behavior. So if we can go over, if they're starting to act out when they're in a group class, and just go over with our presence, that's enough. Standing by them, talking out to the rest of the group can be enough. Or to sit down is another step. Or another step is, may I put my hand on your leg, or put my hand on your shoulder, or how are you doing? Is this okay? Because I'm okay with you being here, but how are you doing with this? or a phrase I've used time and time again when I've had somebody who's really starting to abreact and have a deep emotional reaction is, you're among friends here. It's okay. Just be with this. I'll be here with you. Let's ride it out together. We rarely have somebody leave the room, and if we do, then hopefully there's an assistant there or somebody else out there to receive them, because they know we're in here doing yoga nidra. When I'm at the homeless shelter or I'm at the residential shelters, I may be in the room by myself with people, but the staff know I'm in there. And if somebody comes out, they're ready, because they're alerted that what we're doing can set off abreactions. I have had people who've been very, very disruptive, and I've had to set some what I would call loving boundaries on them. And that's when I might take them aside after the group or call them up and talk about, is this group the best place for you? Or, I'm fine with you having these kind of reactions. How are you doing with it? And maybe individual sessions might be helpful here to help you work with what's going on. So we are trying to create a sense of containment and boundary, which might take them out of our group. But that's rare.
Okay, so I've had people react very strongly and dealt with it before or after class, but I don't think I know what disruptive behavior is. Could you describe it to me?
Yeah, somebody starts to scream so loudly that the room is starting to shake. And I've had that happen, and I used to work in a large facility with a lot of therapists, and I had somebody go off one time. I mean, they were just screaming bloody murder. And all the therapists in the building came down on me afterwards, and I said to them, what are we doing here, guys? this is the work we're supposed to be doing, and sometimes it gets uncontained. I'm not here trying to shake the building, but every once in a while that happens. So, yeah. I've never been injured. I've been threatened. But I always meet threat with curiosity.
Yeah.
And a sense of, okay, where are the exits? I'm not stupid.
Okay, I've been threatened. I get it.
I have one friend who was injured severely by a person that they were working with. And it was because they kept pushing and prodding them and goading them and trying to change them. And finally the person said, you get it. So don't push, don't prod, back off. Give them space. Make sure you're safe. Maneuver yourself so you're between the exit and them. I've just seen time and time. The only place I've seen people really get into trouble is when they will not back off and they keep pushing the person. And the person feels unsafer and unsafer and unsafer. Oh, thank you. See, they want to hear you.
Okay, so I've had it where they've had strong reactions during the nidra, and then they come at me afterwards.
Sure.
And then I just handle that.
Right, and that's when I'll say, this might be something that we want to sit down together privately and book a session.
Okay.
Or, I would love to refer you. And we can talk about referrals later. Okay. So I'm going to cut the question short. We're going to get back to this later. Is it Denise? My partner. One of the things you want to do is, while Denise and I are up here. Track your own internal process. What are you projecting onto me and onto Denise? And keep it as a question, which is what I do. Is it true? Because maybe it's just pure projection. Maybe you are catching something, but watch how you bracket it within yourself. Watch your own reactions. And to me, the image I had a long time ago when I'm doing this work is I'm climbing a tree with another person. And there are all these branches. So there are simultaneously branches that we could go down at any point. I may go left, and you're thinking I should go right. Well, there's another branch. You could go right. And we're just exploring branches. And some of the branches come back to the main trunk. But some branches go out, and we're out here, and that didn't go very well. So let's follow the branch back, and let's start again. And some branches lead down, and some lead up, and some lead left and right. So we have to find a better metaphor. But I'm always thinking of lots of branches. So you may be picking up a branch of, why didn't he do that? Because I did that. And if that branch that I didn't take is really strong, you know what's going to happen? It's going to call me back at some point. So I'm fine missing a branch, because my feeling is if it's an important branch to them, they'll keep calling me back. Or they'll think I'm a schmuck and find somebody else to work with. Got to keep our sense of humor here. Sorry, do you mind me? I'm up here having a good time. I don't care about you. And close your ears for a moment. I don't care about her either. The moment you start to care, you're lost. You've got to really feel like you're here having a good time. And that I'm here for me. And because I'm here for me totally, that means I'm here for her totally. Because she's not separate. But if I'm not having a good time, then two of us may be not having a good time. And I'm not saying it's not difficult at times and uncomfortable, but we want to feel like we're enjoying it. Otherwise, go do something else. I'm having too good a time this morning. So thank you for taking the time to be here. So.